Two movies vied for some attention on very different size screens this week. One, a new theatrical entry in a long and lucrative franchise based upon beloved characters from a popular Japanese game. The other, a Chinese blockbuster that just arrived on these shores via Netflix. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Today, we discuss Warner Brothers' new film, Pokemon Detective Pikachu, and the Chinese import, The Wandering Earth, and try to sort out if either is worth your money, your time, or both, with frequent On Film contributor Kyle Alvarado. Good morning, Kyle.
Morning, Chuck. Thank you for having me.
Welcome back. Let's lead off with a Pokemon film, a film that you and I would not normally be seen at.
Oh, well.
maybe not me. Maybe you. This is in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, well, exactly. So Detective Pikachu, it's the first live-action take on the famed Pokemon franchise. It took over the world about 20 years ago and swept up many kids, myself included, in its catch-em-all mania. And in those 20 years, it never really let go of its chokehold. So when this video game adaptation was announced, a lot of people, myself included, took a wait-and-see approach with the film. And much to my surprise, it was a solid adaptation. Probably one of the best in the genre, which isn't exactly saying much, but it's solid. The film stars Justice Smith as Tim Goodman. He's a failed Pokemon trainer who comes to a futuristic Poke-human haven known as Rhyme City to investigate a death in the family. The film is directed by Rob Letterman of Goosebumps fame, and it's very much within his wheelhouse as a family filmmaker. But the real draw here is the main character of Pikachu, played by Ryan Reynolds. It's a motion capture performance. It's kind of like they took his Deadpool character and put foam core on all the soft, on all his edges.
And cutified him.
Yeah, and it works for the most part. But it's also worth noting that the film stars very serious actors, you know, Bill Nighy and Ken Watanabe in supporting roles. But for the most part, I enjoyed it. What did you think?
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I was begrudgingly taken to this on Mother's Day by my son, who's now 18, a little bit out of the demo for this film.
No such thing.
Okay. But he did grow up in the Pokemon era. And for people that don't know, Pokemon are these hundreds of little characters, very Japanese characters that some people go looking for on their apps now, Pokemon Go. But this was a film that I thought is unique in the marketplace because it's PG, not PG-13. It's clearly aimed at families. There was a lot of families there. It went over really well. It has a villain, but not, you know, Bill Nighy's character is more misunderstood.
Yeah, he's not terrifying.
That's right. I mean, it's not an end of the world scenario we're dealing with. There are action sequences. I was really taken with, particularly the first half of the film, that has a very noirish feel to it. Detectives, low light, shadows,
the
city at night, neon.
It's almost like a kid's Blade Runner in a lot of ways.
Yeah. It had some really nice textures to it. And Ryan Reynolds, as you say, is proving once again that he can pretty much carry a film just on his voice and delivery.
Yeah.
For most of the film, he is an animated character. And the choice to put a live action animated character movie together, I thought worked really well. The technology now has gotten to a place where we just fall right in and believe that these things exist in our world.
Yeah. And
so I was pleasantly surprised. Justice Smith, I thought, too, while being slightly overshadowed by Ryan Reynolds, the choice to have a person of color as a protagonist, it's a trend we're seeing more and more, particularly in family-friendly films. So that's delightful. If there was a negative for me, you know, the last act of the film kind of falls into the normal, okay, we've got to have a big action roundup and a bunch of reveals, and it lost some of its uniqueness for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. And certainly the plot kind of ricochets around like a lightning bolt. But what I really, really enjoyed about the film, and I guess more fans will pick it up, but when you play the Pokemon games, there's a lot of weird characters in them. They almost have like a Yorgos Lanthimos dialogue feel to them.
Interesting.
And this film kind of captures that in a lot of ways. You have kind of campy characters. They speak in a strange way. And just to see them capture the texture of the franchise was something that I really appreciated just as a fan.
I also thought that there was a lot there for the adult viewers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little inside jokes and a lot of film references too. I mean, there's a Howard the Duck type of character. There's a little bit of feel of Disney's Zootopia going on. And
Who Framed Roger Rabbit too.
Exactly, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. There's even a really sly insert from Basic Instinct for that's very brief, but people will get it.
It works.
I know that film. So I can't complain. I was delighted, frankly.
Yeah, and, it's like you're never bored. Like it's solid.
You know, I think while it's exciting and engaging at times, it's certainly one of those movies you can't see how they would make into a movie. Yet here it is, and while I don't know that I would endorse it for all viewers, certainly for family entertainment, this is certainly a diverting entertainment, and it's a film mostly that knows its audience and sticks to what it knows.
Yeah.
That's refreshing, actually, in this marketplace.
You don't see that nowadays.
So from a Japanese pop culture icon to the Chinese blockbuster The Wandering Earth, big switch there coming to our small screens. The Wandering Earth is, to be sure, a phenomenon in China. It's the highest grossing science fiction film in Chinese history. I think it's pulled in over $700 million to date, most of that from its home country. And thanks to Netflix's recent purchase of the film's global streaming rights, the film has wandered into our homes and across the world. The Earth of the title is our Earth, decades from now, being propelled by thousands of rocket engines away from a rapidly expanding sun in hopes of escaping a dying solar system. As you can imagine, depicting a planet-wide cataclysm and coordinated global response is a monumental undertaking for a two-hour movie. Little time is wasted setting up the scenario and implementation of a solution. The building of giant underground cities to house half the Earth population. I'm not sure what happened to the other half, but they seem to have gone peacefully in death. Atop these underground cities are massive engines pointed skyward to push the Earth out of orbit. Most of this setup flashes by in a flurry of images, voiceovers, and English subtitles, and we spend most of the movie along the first legs of a 2,000-year journey to another solar system. All's well, of course, until Jupiter gets in the way and threatens to end the Earth's wandering too early. Cue a small band of heroes who must alter the Earth's course, or the human race will be devoured by the solar system's gaseous fifth planet. As always, there's little margin for error, and some sacrifice will be required if success is to be achieved. You know, Kyle, most of this story unfurls at a breakneck pace. The movie's reliance on cliches from American end-of-the-world action movies suggests that the tastes of Chinese audiences, at least, and the youthful filmmakers behind this movie have been raised and unduly altered by the big-budget blockbuster U.S. exports of the last two decades. The Wandering Earth team are more than a little indebted to Roland Emmerich and Michael Bay, whose disaster films and Transformer franchises provide the obvious model for this overripe and overhyped action disaster sci-fi concoction. It would have been better if they'd gone further back in cinema time and learned perhaps from Steven Spielberg. The best I can say for The Wandering Earth is that it is no worse than the precedent films it mimics, which isn't saying much. Unless you like those films.
I mean, you know how I have a soft spot for 90s disaster films. And
okay.
this one is very much within that wheelhouse. But I mean, I agree. I think it moves quicker than those films. It tries to jam a lot in there. And I think the mistake a lot of these big budget tent poles make, regardless of where they're made, the best ones work when they sort of strip everything down to just a bare plot and they just propel forward. Movies like this one, where they really sort of jam sentimentality, you jam all these action scenes in there, you sort of lose the main focus of it.
But that's all the elements of a typical Roland Emmerich film.
Yeah. So. But there's a level, I feel like there's a level of finesse when he does it. I think he knows not to put too much in there. It reminded me of that movie, The Core.
Of course. Which, one of the worst.
Exactly, yeah. And it reminded me of The Core in all the bad ways. It was just kind of overstuffed, overplotted. Having said that, it was beautifully made,
right.
And I regret not seeing it on a big screen. If you're going to watch movies like this, they sort of benefit from a right proper theatrical screening viewing.
Which is interesting. Pokemon, the Pikachu movie, being on a big screen, I think will work perfectly well in people's homes.
Yeah.
This film that's coming into our homes was clearly designed for a big screen, and we'll never see that big screen, at least on these shores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think for me, perhaps the expectation factor was a problem for me because I had very high expectations given the build-up to the film. And then Netflix just dumped it on their website with no fanfare, which was curious to begin with, or maybe a warning.
Mm-hmm.
But I love science fiction from outside the U.S. You know, we often think of science fiction as being a wholly American genre, and it's not. And I thought this was going to be an opportunity to see science fiction filtered through a different culture, a different lens, a different approach. And what I got was mostly a repackaged American blockbuster, which is fascinating in its own cultural study way.
Yeah.
But does not make for a great film.
Correct, yeah.
Or even a good film.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion.
No, I agree.
Your mileage may vary, but depending on how you feel about The Core or 2012 or...
Armageddon.
Transformers 2, 3, and 4.
Deep Impact.
Right. It goes on and on and on. We're joking, but I think my point is that almost every scene in this film, I've seen some derivation of it in myriad other films.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot new.
Yeah, they don't really add much to the genre. I will say this, the image of the Earth shooting through solar space. It's very beautiful.
That's the one moment for me that captured me as well, particularly watching the Earth powering itself past Jupiter.
Yeah.
It's a stunning visual, but we only get seconds of it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to luxuriate in some of the special effects because they are unique.
Yeah.
The effects aesthetically are slightly different than what we're used to, but there's never any time to just look at the film.
Yeah. The film would benefit from just letting the camera sit there for a second.
Well, some have called the film unwatchable. I don't hold with that. But there are a lot of better choices out there, particularly for your home viewing. So I thought we'd wrap up, and since we're talking about science fiction and science fiction made outside the U.S., maybe with a couple of recommendations for foreign language science fiction. And I know at the top of your list, I'm guessing, is a Russian film.
Yes, it is. It's if you talk foreign science fiction with me, I will immediately just... talk about Solaris. It's 1972, Andrei Tarkovsky. He considered it an artistic failure. I think he has nothing to be concerned about. I think it's a very powerful film about humanity exploring its purpose in space. Why do we need to explore? It's been considered the anti-2001.
Yeah.
And it's my favorite.
Very Russian.
Very Russian. Very Russian.
Very slow, but...
it'll change you.
Tarkovsky was a master.
Very much
of the Russian cinema.
What about you?
For me, a similar era, a few years before 1965, unusual Jean-Luc Godard film from the French New Wave took a stab at quasi-science fiction with Alphaville. This, to me, is a noirish off-world detective tale that has, you can see some of the reverberations in Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
So, and low-tech science fiction, and very French. So for people wanting to walk on that side of the moon, you know, check out Alphaville. And Solaris I can also highly recommend. Well, it's always good to chat movies with you, Kyle. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Keep watching. I've been discussing the new live-action Pokemon film Detective Pikachu and the Chinese sci-fi import The Wandering Earth with frequent on-film contributor Kyle Alvarado. Detective Pikachu is a family-friendly PG-rated pleaser based upon the Japanese card and video game characters, and The Wandering Earth is a new Chinese blockbuster that has become one of the highest-grossing films of the year, and it just became available on Netflix, which is not necessarily a good thing. On Film's engineer is Seth Van Meter. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.